Always a great joy to come to Roswell, and we are at the Roswell Earth Station headquarters here on Main Street, right down the street from the UFO Museum. All the big action last night, of course, in town. And Dennis Balthizer, always one of our favorite people and a resident of Roswell. Dennis, you talked to somebody last night, but it wasn't here. It was someplace else, right?
I was invited to go out to Bottomless Lake State Park, which is just east of town, and do a lecture for the state park out there, which was just a real kick because it was outside and had a fair crowd, and it was a fun night.
I wonder how that place got its name.
It was built back in the 30s by the CCs, mm-hmm. and it was a recreation area. There's a swimming area out there, and even go out. We have very little water here, you know. But it was a fun time last night, and I got one coming up tomorrow night, 4th of July. I'm doing a lecture for a family reunion of a doctor friend we have here in town who has 40, 50, or 60 people coming in from Louisiana. So I'll get to do a lecture for some Cajuns, which ought to be a riot.
Well, yeah, that ought to be fun. Now, let's tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you in case you do lectures and do talk about some interesting subjects, and we'll get into some of those in a minute. But then just go over to your website, which we have a link to, but go ahead and give it again.
The website is www.truthseeker@roswell.com. That's all one word, truthseeker, the word A-T, roswell.com.
And they can, of course, contact you through there.
There, and they can get my email address off of there, my phone number.
Right. And I don't know, you know, you might be able to afford him, folks. Who knows?
I'm cheap.
Yeah.
I'm not in this by any means to make money, as my wife will attest to.
That's the reason I brought it up, is because we've talked about this before.
Yeah,
it's kind of a mission.
It's a love of wanting the truth, and I've dedicated many years to it, and will probably continue to dedicate years. I don't know that we'll ever get the truth, but we will keep pursuing it at least.
Well, you know, I haven't talked to you. We did a little phone deal after Aztec, which you emceed as well.
Right.
And later we talked to Scott and Suzanne Ramsey, who mm-hmm. are probably really the top experts, don't you think, maybe, about...
Aztec?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Scott has been into a lot of the archives. He's been down to the Air Force Base in Alabama, the historical archives down there many times. And, you know, Aztec is one of those cases where at first I didn't know if there was anything to it, but the more research that is done, the more I'm thinking something did happen in Aztec also.
Well, and it's very close there to where you actually have done some work. I mean, I don't think you've actually been to Dulce, but you've done a lot of writing about underground bases.
And Dulce is that one of those places that we're not sure what's going on there, if anything. It could be a diversionary place for something else that the government's doing, but there's been a lot of stories out of Dulce about UFOs, about underground systems, and possibly aliens there, possible biogenetics, and all things that...
Have you ever been on top of that little mesa?
No, I worked with a researcher from Georgia, and him and I were going to go up there under the pretense of a hunting trip as an excuse and try to get access to some of the places up there. And every time he mentioned Dulce, he wound up with some kind of a problem, either a close automobile accident or a threatening phone call or things like that. So,
well, maybe we shouldn't be talking about it.
He backed out of it. He really did. He backed off of it. But I think... several researchers I know have been up there, and it does need more pursuing because we think there is something to it.
Now let's talk about Roswell. You've been investigating Roswell. You chose to move here because you wanted to find out that this obviously captured your imagination right off the bat. I think someone told me, and I believe in a passing conversation, you mentioned that you had found some other witnesses or survivors or something?
The problem we have, Jerry, is that this thing happened 58 years ago, so the guys that were involved, if they're still alive, they're probably late 70s, early 80s, getting up in years, and we're losing witnesses several a year, so we're excited any time a new witness comes along. And just since I've talked to you the last time, I've had two. One was a woman who worked in communication at the base, a civilian employee. And she handled all the phone systems out there with, which was Mountain Bell Telephone, I believe, back then. And I got a hold of her son, who lives here. And he said, Dennis, he said, I don't know how they threatened her, but they did threaten her, and she would never talk about it, and took it to the grave with her. So there was another case of threats. And in fact, I wrote an editorial a month or two ago about why are these witnesses being threatened if nothing happened here? Because not only some civilians, but also the military people that were involved. And if this was a weather balloon, there's no need to have threats. And that's my main interest and why I probably keep after this Roswell incident, because no one has been able to explain to me how you would be threatened over a weather balloon or crash test dummy or something like that.
Right, and even if it were top secret at the time, this is a long time since then.
Right, right.
You had another witness?
I had another one. Son lives in Albuquerque now, and I contacted him, and the same story. His dad worked at the base and said, I know some things, but I can't talk about it.
And he never did.
And never did. Never talked to anybody in the family other than to make that statement, that I knew some things that I can't talk about.
You know, it's pretty amazing that people don't talk about these things, but the effect of the government, and especially back in those days, everybody was very patriotic, so if they told you not to talk about it, you usually didn't.
Well, you know, my newest editorial talks about the timing on some of the books and reports that have come out. Lieutenant Colonel Corso, the day after Roswell, came out in 97 during the 50th anniversary. 2 weeks before the 50th anniversary, the Air Force came out with their case closed report. And it seems that some of these authors and some of the reports that come out are in direct conflict with the anniversary date. Maybe it's good salesmanship, I don't know. But again, this year, 2005, we have another one in Nick Redfern's book.
Yes, that's an interesting, I don't know where that came from.
His approach is that it was small Japanese beings with a balloon supporting a Horton flying wing. It's a possibility, I suppose, but there's a lot of things so far. I haven't read the book, but the reports I've seen and the comments made, there's a lot of questions about that one, too.
Yeah, it's a little strange. Nick's a well-known researcher, and in fact, he's going to be on the show next week.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't come to Roswell. His excuse to me was that he had a vacation booked in Mexico, and he'd already paid for it, so he needed to go, and they moved the publishing date up. I don't know how well he would have been received anyway.
I don't either. I know Stanton Friedman and several other researchers on different lists on the Internet have made comments. There's several things in the book, apparently, that we're not in agreement with, that we need to...
Right.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt for the time being, but he's going to have to come up with a lot of documentation, a lot of verification.
Well, the interesting thing, I mean, we're at war, or had been at war, and it's over, so I guess maybe we might have used the Japanese POWs if there were still any in the country. There might have been 2 years later, I don't know.
Possibly, but we used chimpanzees before we used people down at White Sands for a lot of the testing we did down there, and our government, to me, there wouldn't be anything that would surprise me, really, as far as using humans for anything. The Montauk Project up in Long Island, supposedly there was a lot of mind
control
type things taking place there.
And, of course, a famous thing in the South, but the syphilis experiment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
Our government's not beyond doing that.
Anyway, it'd be interesting to follow that up. Talking about how these things are received in Roswell, it's been a year almost now since Peter Jennings called it a myth. And not quite, but...
I wrote an editorial on that also.
I know you did. That's the reason I brought it up.
that was an opportunity for a major news media to shoot us straight and come out with some good information that the public needed. And I thought that the first 45 minutes or so of the show were pretty decent. They had some good witnesses, some good testimony.
Yeah, it looked like they were going to really do a good job, and... I don't know, maybe they looked at it and said, hey, wait a minute.
I'll give you an example of how the media works. Albuquerque, our local affiliate up in Albuquerque, had contacted me and wanted to interview me about the show. And of course, Stanton Friedman spent hours being taped and things for the show, and he probably got maybe 15 seconds on the show.
Yeah, and all he came out as a book author.
Yeah, and a book author wanting to make money.
Yes.
Whereas on the local affiliate here, I probably had about 3 or 4 minutes of coverage. But yet, Stanton is the original researcher on Roswell and should have had a lot more coverage than he had. So it was quite a disappointment, and it was typical of what we get from the media, I think.
I often wonder, it's almost like Peter Jennings or somebody higher up than him, even, that's writing the checks, said, hey, wait a minute, you can't do that kind of show.
Jerry, you're in the radio business, and I would hate to think that our government is telling the media what they can and cannot do. We have freedom of speech, freedom of press, and things like
that. Well, if they are, they disguise it in a way like, hey, these advertisers aren't going to buy this, and don't you want to make a little money, and don't you want to keep your...
But did you notice the advertisers?
They didn't have it.
Right. Yeah. They weren't the big advertisers.
No, as a matter of fact, in the business, what we talk about, you buy bulk buys, 1,000 spots for a year, and they put them on when you don't have anything else on. That's the only thing they had on plus per inquiry.
Well, you know, you can go back 58 years, and that same thing happened here when KGFL interviewed the rancher and put it on wiretape. They supposedly got a call from the FCC saying if you broadcast that, you have 24 hours to get another job because you no longer have a radio station.
Could have happened.
Yeah, could have.
The FCC had a lot of power back in those days especially.
It sure did, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about what you're into right now. What are you working on? I've been to a lot of pyramid shows. Anything new on that?
Well, I did a lecture down in Las Cruces a couple weeks ago, and one of the questions that came up during the lecture was a triangular-shaped rock on the back of the Sphinx that they asked me about, and I wasn't aware of it, and I caught a hold of one of our board members on the Pyramid Association board I'm on, and asked him about it. He said, yes, there's definitely a rock back there in that shape, and he believes that it's a tunnel system that goes into the Sphinx. And we've always thought that on the left paw of the Sphinx, there is a tunnel system where perhaps there's information on how the pyramids were built, which we've never been able to find anywhere, and also some information on Atlantis. But the Egyptian people will not let us go in there. The problem we're going to have
Well, it's a big tourism business for them.
That's it. That's it, exactly. We're trying to convince the world that the Egyptian pyramids weren't built by the Egyptians. And the tourism industry is not going to allow that for a while.
Well, that's true. They can stop it, probably, even though they could probably still capitalize on it, saying an ancient civilization was here.
And it's just like the Roswell incident. If you watch some of these shows about the pyramids, is Hawass, the guy that is their chief archaeologist, it's pretty biased when you really get right down to it. They put out what they want you to know.
I noticed I was talking to a couple of people this morning. They've lost their funding on the new Roswell dig. They thought they were going to get that.
Well, I didn't hear that yet.
No, the museum has decided to build a new location and take that $30,000 and put it to it then.
Well,
they're not going to...
I'm not sure that the research wouldn't be more important than a new building.
Right.
But that's not my call.
Yeah, and so... Once again, I guess they're out looking for somebody to underwrite that. Seems like you're always halted at every turn, and they had the Sci-Fi Channel writing these things, and lo and behold, NBC buys them.
You're right.
Subsidiary of General Electric, and all of that comes to a halt.
Maybe a big connection there somewhere, huh?
Yeah, you're right. That's what I was trying to get at. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who donates to the new building. You never know.
How's the coverage going on your show? Increasing?
Oh yeah, we're doing quite well. We have about 150,000 listeners a week, and it varies sometimes a little more than that. And we're now up in the top 40,000 of all websites in the world.
Great.
And just 3 or 4 months ago, we were like 70,000. 2 or 3 months before that, 90,000. So we got the right trend. And like I told somebody earlier, we don't want to be number one, but I'm not going to settle until we get number two.
Good thinking. That's a positive attitude.
What about your website? I know you post a column every month, and are you still running it for the Move On Journal too?
Yeah, I'm putting out editorials every other month, and they get posted in about 15 websites and magazines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a link to them too.
Yeah, and get good responses on most of them. I just put one out last week, another new one, and my webmaster up in Albuquerque is just fantastic because I write the text and then she does some artwork.
Yes.
And I never know what's going to come back.
She's a nice lady. I get emails from her once in a while.
And very talented, and I really appreciate having her. She's been with me since the get-go back in 1998.
Well, as you know, it's not easy to get broadcast vehicles about UFOs on the air. The new prime time schedule coming up this fall has quite a few UFO and paranormal shows.
It does, but, and again, I'm concerned on what we're going to see.
Well, of course.
Whether it's factual or whether it's what somebody wants us to see. The media thing, with me on lectures, that's one of my favorite things about doing the research, because I get to share, and my editorials, I get to share my research, and I don't do the research like a lot of researchers. I don't say, this is the way it is. I give you my research, and then let you decide. And I think that's the only way I can do it.
That's one thing I've always liked about you. You're pretty objective. You lay it out there. We try to be.
Yeah, and a lot of them don't. There's over 2,000 websites on Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
So you know that a big percentage of those are second, third, fourth-hand research.
And I have people write me every day or two that buy some of the debunking stories.
Sure. Well, we need that. I think we need that to keep us researchers honest. If we didn't have the debunkers, it'd be a one-sided thing. And I'm always ready to go fishing, if we come up with an answer on this, because I don't need the frustration and the headaches you get from doing this research.
You have the answers, the potential answers narrowed down somewhat, or is it still just kind of wide open, all of the suspects?
I may have talked to you before about this, Jerry, but my theory on the Roswell incident is that it was something extraterrestrial, because it wasn't ours and it wasn't Russian, and we were the only two powers at the time that probably could have had anything. It's my thinking that whatever was recovered here still is not understood by the military and the government, mainly because if they can come here from wherever they're from, they have technology and knowledge that we can't comprehend. And I believe that we are still trying to get military benefit out of whatever we recovered. We may have got some of that through, like Corso talked about, the lasers, microchips, and things like that. But unless we have already got all the military benefit out of it, they're not going to go public with it. And this may not happen in my lifetime or your lifetime, because I used to think maybe in 10 years we'd know, but I'm starting to think maybe not, that it's a control thing.
The one that you bring up something interesting there, that it may be national security and may be the government saying this, but I'm becoming more and more of the school of thought that corporate interest in developing this technology and then selling it is taking precedent over all of it.
That's true, but the corporate interest wouldn't get it until after the military has had it.
But the corporate interest works for the military. We privatize everything. That was my point.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We don't do anything in our daily life that the military hasn't already done.
Right.
Several years ago, I heard that military technology advances about 30 years for every calendar year. And if that's the case, then what they're doing is the military is going to get their advantage out of it before it goes public. Now, your industry may pick it up.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of the military-industrial complex being hand-in-hand.
Yeah.
In other words, there are certain military contractors that benefit from this. They've been turned over to back engineer things, find out how they work, and they're not about to give up their patent.
That's right. That's right.
And so the best way to do that is just continue.
And, cover-up today is such a common thing. One of the things I emphasize at lectures is that anybody up the age of about 35 or 40 doesn't understand cover-up because they're growing up with it.
Right.
It's a way of life.
And as I tried to allude earlier, it's not so overt that somebody from the government would call up Jerry Pippen and say, don't talk about that anymore.
No.
That's not the way it works. A third party would call up and say, you know, we're going to spend $5,000 with you next month, but you're on the subject. It's not, we can't sell anything that way.
Well, you know, you're familiar with, well, familiar with the interception in Oklahoma in 97.
Sure.
And I am convinced after that that you or I can talk about anything we want. What goes over this radio wave is no problem for the government because they can deny it.
Yes.
Now, if you start getting physical evidence, that's a different story. And that's what happened to me in Oklahoma.
Right, right. And we have it still on our website under Dennis Balthazar. You click on that picture, it's a scary story about what happened to him up in Stillwater. For people who haven't heard that, why don't you tell a little bit about what you had there and why you went to Stillwater?
Got a phone call from a gentleman in Oklahoma, said his daddy had been stationed here as a military policeman and had a piece of the medal. He had guarded the ambulances, taken the bodies down to the infirmary at the base, saw a live being get out, walk in the hospital with the doctors, and saw some of the dead ones, and had this piece of metal and was now afraid of it and wanted to get rid of it. So I made arrangements to go meet the guy and try to do an interview with him, get the medal and have it tested. Everything confidential because the family was concerned about their safety. The old man told his son people would kill over that piece of metal. So I went over to Oklahoma and had made all the arrangements to get there and get the medal. And when I got there, I checked into a hotel in Stillwater and made 3 phone calls on a Saturday and kept getting a recording. About 3:30, the phone rang. A woman said, meet him at Denny's restaurant at 7 o'clock. So I went to Denny's, and a man and woman walked in. He said, are you Dennis? I said, yeah. He said, the gentleman you plan on meeting will not be here. I said, who are you? He said, we're special agents of the United States Air Force, Office of Special Investigation. Got my attention. I said, how did you know I was going to be here? He said, we knew Monday you'd be here Friday. I said, is my phone tapped? He smiled and said, you know how we do business. I spent 3.5 hours with him. Didn't take any notes. I guess I could have walked out. There was no identification given by them. They asked me about halfway through the meeting if I had a business card. And I said, yeah, let's swap. And I gave him my card. He read it and then smiled at me. I never got anything from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I followed up on this over a 6-month period and finally was told on the telephone that if I keep messing with the Air Force, I'm barking up the wrong alley. Click. That was a threat. So I kept it to myself for about 3 or 4 months and finally copyrighted the information in lecture form and went public with it. And really, it's still under investigation because I don't know who I was dealing with, for one thing, and most importantly, I don't know what their motive was.
And if they were not who they said they were, I guess there's a federal law violation.
Oh,
there.
I would hope I could find that out, because if it was a hoax or a scam and I was set up, and that's entirely possible, and I know who they are, then I'm going to prosecute because they're impersonating federal agents, interstate telephone violations, invading my privacy. And I would hope that the Air Force would get behind me and support me on that because they're impersonating their agents.
When you know, a good point about that. That happened, and we had you on the air shortly after that, I think 2000, talking about it. At first, were you pretty shaken up by it? I guess you would be.
I was so unprepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
I went over to Oklahoma by myself. I learned a lot because if it ever came up again, I would certainly have a
witness or something.
A witness, or I'd have a recorder hidden on me somewhere. I'd have some precautions taken. I went over there with the sincere belief that these people were shooting me straight.
Well, you know, they're not going to invite you out anymore since you said you can take a tape recorder.
Obviously. But that's okay, too. The one funny thing was that we were sitting there at that Denny's restaurant, and he said, are you hungry? He said, we're going to get something to eat. Food was not on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I could care less about whether I ate or not. I wanted to know what I was doing in that situation,
yeah,
how I got there, and how to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. You never heard from the guy again?
No, we think we may have found one of the agents in Dallas, and we're working on that right now. I've got a friend in California that's helping me to do some checking on it.
I mean, this piece of metal would be really a find.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if it was actually a piece of metal ever in this whole story, you know, whether it was real or not.
Yeah, I got an email the other day from a fellow who I don't recall where he lives right now, but his last name's Norris, Rick Norris is his name.
Yeah.
And he said, basically, Hey, if Roswell really had a crash with that memory metal, how could it crash? It would just bounce.
He must be on a kick, because I spent 3 weeks with emails with him. He's from Alabama.
Yeah, that's right. And he sends this stuff around, and he has fun with people.
Yeah, and I finally put an end to him and said, "This is our last email." And he said that he always opens his big mouth, and then the serious UFO researchers don't want to talk to him.
Yeah.
And I said, "It's because you're living in a box."
Mm-hmm.
And I put an end to the thing. I won't answer anymore.
Well, I send him back little, just funsy things, because the reason I brought him up is that he's obviously buying or using every line that debunkers talk about as fact, and he's getting a kick out.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like he's part of some deal. I don't know.
Well, Jerry, one of the problems I have as a researcher is because there are so many websites on Roswell, and because there's so many people that are authorities on Roswell, I spent way too much time putting out fires instead of doing research. People will write to me, and I get 150, 200 emails a day, and I need to go through most of them and at least see what's in the emails. But I spent way too much time, correcting people's comments and things like that, and it's frustrating because the time I should be doing actual research, I'm spending, trying to correct things.
Oh, I've often suspected once you're onto something where you start getting these things. That would be a good way to sidetrack people.
Yeah.
What about Area 51? We haven't done anything about Area 51 in a while. Is it closed? Is it still active?
It's definitely not closed. They just built a new tarmac between two of the runways and have put in a new water tank. I'm under the impression that most of the water there is contaminated because of all the nuclear testing they've done and things like that. There's talk of a new aircraft that is supposed to be daylight stealth that takes on the appearance of the sky and probably invisible to the naked eye to see. So it's still very, very active. They've gone from the Grand Cherokees, the Jeeps on the security vehicles, to Ford and Chevy pickups now. They have 99 and 2000 model four-wheel drive pickups they're using for their patrol.
We talk about all these things. You kind of had four or five specialties.
Mm-hmm.
What are you concentrating on right now, basically?
Well, mostly Roswell, looking for new witnesses and going back through and trying to confirm some of the information. When I was in Aztec for the symposium at SMC, David Rudiak was there. And David is one of the gentlemen that has done a lot of good research on the Ramey memo.
Yeah, he's really done quite a lot of things on that. So what's the latest there?
He wants me to go ahead and follow up again on some Freedom Information Act requests I did back several years ago, and spent about 3 years trying to get information about Colonel Weaver's statement in the 1994 book where they say that the photographs were analyzed by a national lab, probably the CIA, we're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I have tried to get information from the Air Force to get copies of the correspondence from the Air Force to the lab and what the results were. They said that the pictures weren't able to be deciphered, so they dropped it there. But Weaver is an outright liar. Colonel Weaver, we know, is an outright liar. He had 31 pages in that manual in the report the Air Force came out with, but they won't back anything he said. And they won't put me in any contact with him either.
So, Colonel Weaver, if you're listening, call Dennis Balthier.
Because you're a liar.
Well, that's a good way to start the conversation.
Well, he is. I mean, it's been proven that the information he put out in those 31 pages is totally untrue. And we don't need that kind of support from the Air Force.
There's another thing, and I don't know if you've thought about it. I may have talked to you about it before. Hey, in 1947, here in Roswell, in July of 47, there wasn't an Air Force. It was the Army Air Force.
Right.
So maybe the Air Force can actually say we have no records.
I've heard that the Navy has a lot of the records for the UFOs. The UFO files are maintained by the United States Navy.
Yeah, that seems to be fairly common thought, at least. Nobody can really prove that, but the Navy certainly is involved in quite a lot of that.
Well, our Congressman Schiff, when he was Congressman for New Mexico, had done that GAO, got the GAO report where he had requested information about Roswell, And they came back and said that all outgoing messages between 1945 and 1949 were destroyed. All incoming messages between 1946 and 1949 were destroyed. By who, they didn't know, and under what authority they didn't know. This was the only atomic bomb group in the world. I'm supposed to believe that the records for that group was destroyed. I just don't buy it.
Good point. So we want the colonel, that you called a liar. What's his name again?
Weaver.
Weaver. Colonel Weaver, call us. And and if you don't want to talk to Dennis, call me. I'll be a third party. I'll just say, Dennis said you were a liar.
And I'll go from there.
What you expect, we talked about it may not ever break. This may be just the way it stays from now on.
Well, Jerry, one of the things that I was questioned about recently that I'm going to have to do some research in getting back to this Lieutenant Colonel Corso and the book The Day After Roswell,
mm-hmm.
Someone asked me recently when he first started doing interviews and talking about this, and I don't know that.
I don't know that either.
The book came out in 1997, about the time of the 50th anniversary.
When did he pass away?
98, I believe.
Right away.
I met him, yeah.
Somewhere along in here.
I had met him three times here in Roswell and had fairly long conversations with him. In fact, I was stationed at Fort Bliss in 1961, 62, 63.
So you hung out with colonels?
No, but I was in an engineering battalion, and we built some of the missile sites out at White Sands, mm-hmm. and McGregor Range, and he used them missile sites because he was down there at White Sands.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to do some research to see when Corso came online talking about this stuff.
You know, I've never had an opportunity to meet him or interview him. What was your gut feeling about him?
He's likable, real short feller, good military career, excellent military career, and just a likable guy, believed what he said. But the problem was, you read his book, and it was one of them books you couldn't put down. You got into it, and it was so interesting, you just couldn't put it down. But when you get to the end of the book, there's no references. And that bothered me. It was co-written by Burns, who's the editor of the UFO magazine, and we don't really know how much Burns wrote and how much Corso wrote. But his theories and the things he talks about, which goes back to what you mentioned earlier about the industrial complex, he says he turned some of this stuff over to them, and they believed that they had found it. And it was a simple solution to the way he explained it. But it bothers me a lot that he has no references in the book. I'm a stickler for validation and confirmation on information.
That's the reason you're a good researcher. What is your hunch about the memory medal? Is that just a story, or do you think?
No. We have today memory medal in our military. I don't know if they're using it yet, but I do know that they have the memory medal.
Why don't you tell people what we're talking about?
Well, it's a metal where you crumble it up, and within a few seconds, it's almost in a liquid state where it goes back to its original shape without any creases or show any bending. The uses would be unlimitable. The military uses for it, for example, in aircraft and things like that would be just fantastic. And this is one of the three types of metal that was supposedly found on the Roswell crash, the other two being the I-beams, with the writing on them, which were lightweight but not breakable, and then a material like bakelite or plastic, that was the third material. And these were defined by Jesse Marcel and Jesse Marcel Jr. in their interviews when they were talking about the metal here.
Now, you know, when we talk about Jesse Marcel Jr., he's up in age now too and still serving on active duty. Probably he doesn't want to at this point.
I was shocked when I found out he went to Afghanistan, wasn't it?
Well, he was in Iraq.
In Iraq. But if you look at Jesse Jr.'s record, a medical doctor, a helicopter pilot, an aircraft accident investigator, he has all the criteria for what the military needs. Now, his age, 58 and 11 is what, 69?
Mm-hmm.
So he'd have been late 60s or close to 70 when they called him back.
Evidently, there's quite a few in that area, which is another subject which we don't really have time to get into.
But it may be a critical MOS that the military needs, and he had the credentials for it, as far as I can tell.
So in the Air Force, your MOS wasn't drummer?
No. I was in an engineering battalion. In fact, I was in the 815th Engineering Battalion, and I was in from 59 to 62. The Army sent me to Greenland twice, and I'm never forgiven them for that. We went up there to build a road for the Air Force, and I got out of the Army in 62, and I went to work for the Texas Highway Department, civil engineering work, and doing quality control and quality assurance for 33 years. So I had 36 years in engineering background, and I'm proud of that, because as a UFO researcher, that should tell you I'm not a loose cannon. I have a background that's respectable.
Well, that's the reason I asked you about the memory medal.
The music's been a fun thing. I still play drums. I'm playing in a church praise band here in town. And it's still something that I enjoy.
Is that over at the First Baptist?
First Baptist Church here in Roswell.
Well, someday we're going to have to get you to send us a CD.
Okay.
Be a good bumper.
Yeah.
Be a good way to introduce you.
Yeah.
Let's wrap this up. We've got a couple of minutes yet. Texas, of course, I don't know if it's similar to Greenland or not. Temperature-wise, it's not.
No, but from Texas, I told you where I went with the Army, and in Texas, I did about 80% of the out-of-state work for Texas.
Oh, did you?
So I traveled to 37 states. I was in Korea in 1971 for 3 months.
What were you doing there, building roads?
They were building a bridge for Texas. The Lake Austin Bridge was done in Korea. The steel was manufactured over there and then shipped over.
So outsourcing's nothing new.
Well, it was kind of embarrassing to tell all my friends I was going overseas to get steel for a bridge in Texas, but the unions, I guess, have priced themselves out of the business, but we saved quite a bit of money. Mm-hmm. And then, excuse me, in 91 and 92, I went to Cape Town, South Africa.
What happened there? What were you doing?
That was a bridge for the Houston Ship Channel. So my last big job was a $94 million bridge over the Houston Ship Channel that was fabricated in South Africa.
Well, I have an interview we're going to do in Galveston here pretty soon. Will I go over that bridge?
It's between Baytown and LaPorte.
Okay.
And it replaced the tunnel that used to go under the ship channel.
But I have to drive over there.
It's a beautiful thing. And my wife has trouble when I say there's a pretty bridge, you know. To me, they're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the few occupations where you have something permanent that's going to be there after you're gone.
Good point. Good point. It's almost like the people that built the pyramids or whoever built them.
Right. Let's say whoever.
Yeah. Anything you'd like to bring out before we wrap this up? Have you thought about your next editorial? You've written some pretty stinging ones.
Well, you know, this last one...
I mean that in a complimentary way as an investigative report.
Thank you. This last one, I really had a problem. I write them about every...
Yeah, Larry and I discussed that last one.
I'm talking about...
Larry Dickin, I'm our producer.
The timing on the Roswell books and things like that. But most times when I get ready to do an editorial, I have an idea a couple of weeks before I put a deadline on myself. This time I absolutely did not. I wrote that editorial about 6 days ago. I sat down one morning, it hit me, and I started writing, and I put the 1,400 words together in a morning, and that was it. As for the next one, at this point, I have no idea what it will be. Something will come up, and I'll get the idea, and then I'll write.
Yeah, there's always, we're never short of material, are we?
No, never.
Yeah, when you're dealing with humanity. There's...
One of the things that I appreciate is shows like you have, in that you give us serious researchers the opportunity to share our research with the public, and I've had a lot of comments from people that have heard your show, and have come back and talked to friends of ours or talked to us and say, hey, I heard Dennis on the Jerry Pippen show, and that's nice.
And so, yeah, it certainly is. It makes me feel good. And that's a good way to wrap up the show. Dennis Balthizer with a warm fuzzy for Jerry Pippen, and we're in Roswell at the Roswell Earth Station. This is quite a little project, Tom Armstrong and people.
I'm watching Tom very closely. I'm interested in this.
Yeah. It's from talking to Tom, it sounds like it's coming along pretty well.
I hope so. We could very well use it.
And, of course, we already have the McDonald's here in town that looks like a UFO.
We have the only McDonald's in the world that looks like that, and we have the only Walmart that has aliens on it.
I haven't been out. I didn't know about that one. We'll have to stop and take a couple of pictures.
Do look at the Walmart.
I want to thank you for the tip. about McDonald's, we got that story out to the world before anybody else did.
Good, good.
You just kind of offhandedly mentioned it one time.
That was one of those. That was one of those editorials that just hit me, and let's do this, and we did it.
Okay. Well, Dennis, thanks very much, and let's give that website once again.
www.truthseeker@roswell.com.
This is Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from the Roswell Earth Station headquarters, and we're right here on Main. You can't miss it. Come in and talk to Tom Armstrong about this place and his plans. I think you'll be impressed. Good night.